was just trying to collate the script for the show, and I think I gave myself a pretty good paper cut. It's one of those deep ones where it's really, it'll take a while to start to bleed, but when it starts, I don't know that it's going to stop anytime soon. I need to go get a towel or something. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program this morning, and it's great to have you all here on this Monday. It is the 25th of January, and a thrill to have you here. And if I start to get loopy, it's just because of the loss of blood. 13 minutes past 9 o'clock, and let me introduce the group to you. Of course, we have a lot to talk about. It was a busy weekend. Hopefully you had a lovely weekend. Hopefully it was perfect, a great weekend for all of you. And it was a hell of a week last week, so maybe, you know, it's the calm after a storm before another storm, and we'll get to sort of figure out where we are this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Thank you for the gauze. panel@wamc.org, and we welcome your letters. Let me introduce everybody to you. Alan Chartok is here, WAMC's very own. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yes, I'm fine. I've had those paper cuts, and they can be nasty. And I'm sure, you know, the staff is going to look after you.
Yes, David, make sure David just brought in some ointment and some bandages. It's fine. It's really not that bad. But
The ointment comes from pigs, you know, as in
ointment. Yes.
Ointment. Yeah. Well, it's
going to be that kind of show, ladies and gentlemen.
Here we are.
Here we are indeed. Let me also welcome Rosemary Armeo to the program, investigative journalist, UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. I'm not bleeding.
Good. Yeah, you know what? If you can say that on any given morning, God love you. That's perfect.
You're ahead.
We hope she's just as well. Libby Post is here, our political consultant and our dear friend. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice.
I'm not bleeding. I'm not, you know, I'm just sitting here waiting for scintillating conversation, but no blood yet.
Well, hopefully you don't have to wait for too long for the scintillating conversation. Helping in that matter, we go to Malcolm Nance, counterterrorism expert, best-selling author, and our good friend. Malcolm, how are you?
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us.
Good to be here. Nobody's bleeding.
Good. No, good. I'm glad.
Don't sound so excited, Malcolm.
It's good to have
There's
you here.
Way too
yeah,
much
I know.
News for me to let it all out right now.
It's good to have you here. Yeah, I know it's good to have you here. Well, welcome, everybody. Again, we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. So a lot of different ways we can start this morning. And the one story that broke on Friday, which we haven't really, we didn't get to because it happened late Friday. It was broken by the New York Times. And that is the story having to do with Trump and the Justice Department. And the only reason I'm even a little leery of doing this story is because, Trump isn't president anymore, so many people wrote to us and said, well, thank God you don't have to spend the entire show talking about Donald Trump anymore. But this seems like a really, really big deal, and I would like to discuss it for a bit. So Trump and the Justice Department lawyer said to have plotted to oust the acting attorney general, trying to find another avenue to push his baseless election claims. Donald Trump considered installing a loyalist in that job. And the man by the name of Jeffrey Rosen was who they were trying to get rid of as the acting attorney general. And then they would get this new guy, Jeffrey Clark, who would go in to help force Georgia state lawmakers to overturn its presidential election results. Because Mr. Rosen had refused the president's prodding, let's say, to carry out those plans, Mr. Trump was about to decide whether to fire Mr. Rosen and replace him with Jeffrey Clark, a lawyer who worked on the plan Department officials convened on a conference call, then asked each other, what will you do if Mr. Rosen is dismissed? And the answer was unanimous. They would resign. Their informal pact ultimately helped persuade Mr. Trump to keep Mr. Rosen in place, calculating that a furor over mass resignations at the top of the Justice Department would eclipse any attention on his baseless accusations of voter fraud. Mr. Trump's decision came only after Mr. Rosen and Mr. Clark made their competing cases to him in a bizarre White House meeting that two officials compared with an episode of Mr. Trump's reality show, The Apprentice, albeit one where the main prize was a constitutional crisis. Alan, it's good that we know this, right?
It is. What we don't know is what would have happened if Trump had won the election. In other words, would this have continued down the same road? Look, we found some people with guts. We found some people who said, I got to look in the mirror for the rest of my life. I'm not going to go along with this. Once again, here was Trump getting on his own people. You know, Rosen was his. So the idea that, you know, he was going to make it happen so that he could stay in office, which I still don't understand how it would have worked. His replacement turns out to have been a fairly staid lawyer who had been around for a while, who apparently was about to sell his soul in order to take the top job. But that's what we know now. And the reason we do talk about it and the reason why it's so important is this country came very close to a terrible anti-constitutional moment in which it looked like the Constitution could go down and Trump would do everything in his power, as all the great anti-democratic figures in history have done, to take over.
Malcolm Nance.
Yeah, you know, that's why this story is so significant. So let me give a little bit of the TikTok on this thing. So the day after Bill Barr resigns and Rosen steps up into the acting attorney general's job, it turns out a Pennsylvania congressman who's part of the Freedom Caucus has had identified that the number three or number fourth guy at Justice, who was the head of the civil division, this guy named Clark, was really sympathetic to the president and was sympathetic to the whole idea of overturning the election. So these two guys work secretly behind the acting attorney general and deputy acting attorney general in order to work with the White House to overturn the election and get this thing, I guess, brought to the Supreme Court or something. Over a period of time leading up to the 3rd of January, right, 3 days before the insurrection, the acting attorney general Rosen got wind of this, that this guy had been in the White House coordinating this thing and was coordinating Rosen to be fired and this guy, Clark, to be made attorney general. I mean, this is coup stuff. So, of course, deputy attorney general, assistant attorney general, went to the White House and in a very contentious meeting said everybody at Justice Department senior leadership would resign. Well, not just according to people I know. I had a talk with Paul Butler, who's an MSNBC legal analyst. Everyone else in the Justice Department would have resigned at the exact same time. So imagine dozens, if not hundreds, of lawyers just suddenly quitting, the Justice Department essentially ceasing to exist, and this White House hack, Clark, would be the acting attorney general. And this is what Pat Cipollone convinced Donald Trump should not happen. And then we had an insurrection.
Does one have to do with the other?
I think they do. I think they do. Trump couldn't get it this way, and of course, he's encouraging now at this point. His only fail-safe plan is for Mike Pence to overthrow the election at the Capitol, and he didn't do it, and then the crowds charge, chanting, hang Mike Pence.
Rosemary Romeo.
I actually read the story and wish that Trump had gone ahead with it and everybody had resigned, because that would have been a dramatic gesture, not unlike the Saturday Night Massacre, that demanded action by Congress. Instead, now what's happening is you're seeing it already key Republicans are backing off from wanting to do anything with impeachment. I had initially said, I said it on this program, it's probably cool to wait and not try Trump right away because more and more evidence was coming out. And indeed, here it is. These are pictures, when you put them all together, of a man who's doing anything he can to pressure for a change. This is happening. The one thing you left out of your TikTok, Malcolm, was that the call to the officials in Georgia came right as this was all playing out, too. So it was a multi-front attack on the election. And it's premeditated and it's dangerous. And I believe it's going to be swept all under the rug. I just don't see 17 Republicans voting for impeachment. And that is a shame. It's as if the journalists are writing for history, not for action now.
I agree with you, Rosemary, but I wanted to ask you a question. What is behind Trump's, need to remain president? There are a number of different theories, one of which is, that he doesn't want to be in an orange jumpsuit when he gets out. Another is that's just the way he is. What do you think?
I think Mary Trump laid it all out. I think this is more than just he doesn't think he's going to go to jail, Alan. He thinks he can get out of everything as he has his whole life. He has never paid for the consequences of his bad actions and decisions. And this is just one more. He does not want to be a loser. And he really, I have to admire almost the tenacity with which he has gone after this. I have learned things about how our elections are processed that I never knew about before because you never had to. But he figured this all out. He and his minions worked it out. How could we stop it here and here and here and here? And damn all of the hypocrisy of it. Like, if the election was fraudulent, then all those Republicans in office who won office, those elections are also fraudulent. How do you explain that? The courts say no, 60 times. He still keeps fighting. That is not because he's afraid to go to jail, which I don't think he is afraid of.
Libby Post.
Oh, I think he's shaking in his boots, afraid to go to jail. There are going to be so many court cases, and we already know that there are so many cases being developed, in New York State alone between the Attorney General and the New York City District Attorney, the Manhattan District Attorney. I do think, and that on top of all the money coming due and everything else illegal that he's done, I do think he's worried about going to jail. And I do think that waiting and having more evidence mount will be helpful in the impeachment trial. I mean, we're reading articles now that, Biden's administration is doomed. I mean, it's like it hasn't even been a week yet. People just need to give everybody a little breathing room to do their job. Everyone is saying, the bipartisanship is already dead, blah, blah, blah. We just need everybody to be able to do their jobs. But I do think Trump is nervous about these lawsuits and bills coming due. Deutsche Bank won't work with him anymore. There's a signature bank. The other bank that gave him loans won't work with him anymore. He's going to be a man without any friends, financially or otherwise. He's going to be an island unto himself, and he'll get even more dangerous and act out even more. The question is whether or not the media will pay attention to his ruminations and his acting out. And, the more he doesn't get any media attention, the crazier he will get, which will just be good for those of us who want to see him go away in the long run. But I just think everybody needs to calm down a little bit and just look at the long term and give folks a chance to do their work. McConnell's going to do his thing. He's going to saber rattle. He's going to do whatever he's going to do to be as obstreperous as possible and say, the Democrats are being, disingenuous. What the Democrats need to do, in my mind, is come out swinging with every single rhetorical bat they can. They need to tie the Republicans in the Senate and the House, to Trump, to COVID, to not wanting to help people. to keeping the misery going. That's what the GOP represents in this country right now, and that's what the Democrats need to say.
Malcolm?
Well, I feel strongly both ways. No. you know, first off, can I make a quick comment about how we're seeing Republicans say that the Biden administration is a failure in 96 hours?
Right.
These guys, their messaging machine is so honed to say that. I saw on day one, you know, I monitor right-wing propaganda every day starting at 3:30 in the morning. And the message came out on the first day, starting with Charlie Kirk and Tucker Carlson, that in one stroke of a pen, Biden had lost 75,000 jobs. And they were talking mainly about the Keystone XL pipeline and whatever else. You know, they have the ability to lie and deceive themselves at a level that very few really do. And what I haven't seen, despite all of what we've been through, is I have not seen really hard pushback. For example, just yesterday on one of the Sunday talk shows, Rand Paul came out and just spewed an entire series of lies about election interference and election needing to investigate the election. And sure enough, the anchor did not push back on that, just allowed him to have his piece. This is where we're having our biggest trouble. Trump voters, the 75 or however many million people that voted for him, live in an alternate ecosphere of lies. And every one of them believes the election was stolen and that Joe Biden is an illegitimate president. How are we going to go forward from there? And we're literally 4 days into the administration. Mm. Let's call it five. It's Monday.
Okay. I have to step up here for the media.
You got a minute.
First of all, George Stephanopoulos absolutely pushed back on Rand Paul and would not let him get away with saying the election was a fraud. Stephanopoulos said, oh, there's two sides, you know, to every issue. And Stephanopoulos held a line on that. I thought he did a great job in that interview. And second, the media is figuring out how to handle a Biden administration. For example, the question, why are you only asking for 100 million doses a day? That's not enough. That is a good question. Is it because Biden is trying to downplay what they're doing, overpromise and underdeliver is what Trump did? Does he want to reverse that, or is there a reason it's only 100 million? These are good questions, and their motives are being called into question, like they're attacking Biden. That's a good question. We have to know the difference.
Rosemary, how in God's name do you expect them to answer that within 72 hours? They don't even know where the coffee makers are yet. And holding them to that level is almost ridiculous.
Here's how you answer it, and I'm not even in the administration. You
say, we have 25 seconds.
I got it. Trump only hit that goal twice. We're going to hit it every single day. Ask us in a month. That's what they should say.
All right, we'll pause there. We will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post. We'll be back right after this. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post on the program this morning on this 25th day of January, 34 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Did you want to respond to, Malcolm, do you want to respond to Rosemary's response?
Wow. Thanks for heating up.
I just think that I'll make a comment, but I won't respond to that. I think, you know, as you guys know, I don't play a journalist. I'm a spy that just happens to talk on TV. So I am not trained in that, even though I'm immersed in the media world all day. But the reason I'm a lot faster and a lot more accurate is because I'm not a journalist. Okay? Because I think the guard.
Oh, my God.
All right. Let him finish, and then you both can respond. I promise. Go ahead.
I'll give you an example. I wrote a book on the Trump-Russia hacking in 6 weeks, and it took the next book in the United States 24 months to write the exact same thing. So my point is, just because Trump abused the media for 4 years and they didn't get to throw all the punches that they didn't, doesn't mean that we should just start taking that out on the Biden administration. Let them find the coffee maker first and stop questioning their motives right out the bat.
Well, Malcolm, I have to say I agree with you. We have to give them some time to find their footing. Yes, Joe Biden is one of the most experienced presidents to ever take office. There's no two ways about it, but he has a young administration, and people just need to give them a little time. If anyone thinks that they're going to cure COVID and everyone's going to be vaccinated by the end of the week, they have their heads where the sun doesn't shine. I mean, people need thinking people, and I know the Trump voters are not, but thinking people need to just calm down and recognize that what has gone on in the last 4 years, but particularly the last year with the inaction of the Trump administration around COVID, has handed the Biden administration a mess that's going to take a little while to unravel and to fix. But we've got people now who believe in science. We've got Anthony Fauci unbound. Okay. We've got David Kessler. We've got good people who understand the problems, and we will make this happen. And we will see vaccines being developed and being manufactured and distributed. I think the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will come online shortly, and we will see things change. But we have to give them time. And Malcolm's right. We cannot expect change to happen within, 96 to 108 hours? It's impossible. We just need to recognize that we're dealing with real human beings who actually think. And when you actually think, it takes a little more time to get things done.
So, you all are calling for the press.
Hold on. Okay. I'm interested. Go ahead, Malcolm.
I said, it's just amazing to me that some journalists are finding their elbows now. The Biden administration made it very clear that the Trump administration lied to them about the COVID vaccine database. The head of the CDC said yesterday she has no idea how much vaccines in the United States, because those people lied about what they told them. They didn't give them the information in the transition. So we're flying blind, but it has nothing to do with the people who just stepped through the front door 5 days ago.
Rosemary, oh, Mary.
Stop it.
Okay, so halfway
Rosemary,
through.
Yes, I'll burst.
Okay, so halfway through
my
that.
Mother just, my mother was sleeping and just came out of the bedroom thinking something was wrong because I yelled out, oh, my God, so loudly.
Well, there is something
what
wrong.
What you all are calling for is for the press to give Joe Biden a break. That is not the role of the press. We don't give Democrats or people we like, supposedly, a break. He is now the chief of state, and he is answerable for all these questions. And yes, he certainly is allowed, as every person on those talk shows yesterday from the Biden administration did, to say, hey, we haven't even been in for a week yet. Of course we know that. But to ask a question, for example, about why is your goal only 100 million doses a day, they have been spending weeks now looking at information. And they came up with that dose for a reason. What was the reason? Are they looking at reevaluating it now? They did bring out all the stuff that they were left untold about. And as for Deborah Birch, Margaret Brennan gave an interview about that interview with her yesterday and said, she said it, we knew all this stuff. It's all been reported. But to hear it from the person's own mouth, from Birch's own mouth, is different, and that's why we presented it. And so to say that the press did it one way and now the officials are doing it another way, it's just crazy. The reason you know about any of this stuff is because of reporting by the news media, not by the administration, and not by spies. They'll write books and we'll find out about it 6 years from now.
Rosemary, I love you. I really do. But you have to admit that journalists in 2016 gave Trump a pass. And, they let him go on and on and on because they were just concerned, especially TV, was more concerned with ratings than anything else. I started watching Morning Joe, and he made some comment about Trump being the worst president and blah, blah, blah. And I thought to myself, God, you gave him a free pass at the beginning. You had him on the show all the time. You heralded him as the anti-Hillary, as the anti-establishment candidate. And it was only after he got elected and you deigned to see how horrible he was that you started going after him. So let's be honest here. You know, the media has been a little complicit in this because of the need for ratings, all right? And it's so easy. It's so much easier to go after people who are not bombastic than it is to go after people who are.
You know, you make a point.
I think you're absolutely right that the media helps.
Hello, I was just beginning to say something.
Alan's point.
I was just trying to say that in the beginning, the media was awful, just awful. I mean, you know, when I was calling Trump a liar from day one, and the Washington Post was, CNN and the others were really just being awful. They got much more aggressive as time went on when it looked like Trump was vulnerable. But I'm not here to say that the media was doing a good job in the beginning because they weren't.
Rosemary.
I never said that they did. I criticize them more than anybody on this show. However, I don't think it's from, they calculated that they'd make more money by backing Trump. They underestimated him. They go, this guy's a clown. He's never going to make it. It's the same thing with the rent is too damn high guy. Remember that guy who ran for governor? Mm-hmm. I don't even remember his name now because he wasn't memorable. But the media makes a show of the oddball. And that's what they did with Trump. It was a mistake that was very regrettable. It cost this country a lot. And I don't want them making it now. So what you're calling for is to give him a break. Go easy on Joe now and see how he does. No. From the very beginning, we got to be asking hard questions. And he has the people capable of answering them, let me add. He is not going to, I think, lie and cheat the way Trump did.
I don't agree with you. And here's respectfully, very, very respectfully. And here's why. I truly believe that Trump was one of the worst miscreants this country has ever had. He was gonna undo the Constitution. He was gonna set up a fascist government in the United States. And the journalists had their responsibilities to make sure everybody knew that once they knew it. But on the other hand, what about the rest of it? At which point do we see Biden is a different person, a responsible person, and deserves a better break? B-R-E-A-K, Rosemary.
Right. Right.
Look, if Joe Biden, maybe you were first.
Go ahead, and then Rosemary.
If there's a scandal, which we all know is not going to happen, but if there's a major scandal with Joe Biden on something and he brings somebody in who doesn't know what they're doing, like Trump did, or any of that sort of stuff, or is self-dealing, or, you know, the emoluments clause is being broken once again, which nobody really paid attention to, fine. But it's about governing, and it's about getting their feet underneath them and correcting 4 years of damage that has set this country back in some ways 50 years. And so, yeah, I think we need to give them a break. I think we need to give them their first 100 days. I think we need to report on what they're doing, not undermine what they're trying to accomplish.
I'm just sorry. This is silly. The press is reporting on what they're doing. There's been huge coverage about how calm it's been this weekend, how so many executive orders have been rolled back and what he's doing. And asking hard questions, asking probing questions is not undermining anybody. Part of governance is being able to answer those hard questions. Trump never could. But we know plenty about how Biden is different. We know plenty about how Biden is doing different because the press is reporting it. What happened in Russia? The question was asked in the media, would Trump have ever had responded in this way? No, he would not have. So you can do both. And the media needs to step up. It cannot compensate for mistakes made on Trump by going easy on Joe Biden. Yes. And furthermore, I think the attention probably isn't on Biden right now. It should be on Congress. It should be on Schumer, who he also cannot give them a break and take time. He is fighting against the master political strategist. And so far, he seems to be losing. I want to see more on that.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll let everybody recharge. I know, I want you to get your energy back.
Yeah.
And We'll come back. I have letters, too. I want to include those. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back. Forty-seven minutes past 9 o'clock on this Monday morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's go to the letters. And Erica says, I'm with Malcolm. It's like jumping out of a 57 Chevy into a 2021 Tesla and within 5 minutes knowing all its bells and whistles. On the unity front, we don't need unity for agreement. Bernie was all over yesterday and he said it best. The American people want us to do something, anything. Kara says, if the Dems allow the Republican Party to dictate the narrative at this point, they have no chance of governing in the future. Stop the Republican machine of lies. Call them out.
Wait. We have a couple of things going on here, one of which is obviously that we have to deal with Joe Biden's view of life and Chuck Schumer's. So right now there's a fight over, for example, the filibuster. Biden is not for reforming the filibuster. I have my own private thoughts as to why that is. He's a moderate. And by not reforming the filibuster, then some of the things that the left or the partial left, won't get done because the filibuster will get invoked. On the fiscal stuff, of course, they have reconciliation and they can do that. And the Democrats can have, just a majority vote. So there's a lot of difference in the way Biden is treating this and the way that Schumer and the Democrats in the Senate are treating it. What do you all think?
Malcolm?
You know what? I'll pass on that one.
Okay.
I get it.
You're welcome.
That's when radio's at its best. Rosemary,
well,
go ahead.
Yeah. Go on. Just the filibuster.
Yeah,
that thing's going to break internally. Go on,
what
Rosemary.
Do you mean? What do you mean?
I think that's not going to be Biden's decision.
No, it's not.
Well, but I don't know that it's going to be Schumer's decision either. I mean,
Schumer may not have the votes. He may not have the votes. There are other Dems besides Biden and his own caucus who don't want to see the filibuster go, which is exactly why McConnell's move is so damn smart. He's dividing the Democrats at the same time that he's making this play for continued power, even in a minority position. He's so evil and so good at what he does, it scares me. So if I were Schumer, what would I do? That's the question you'd ask. What I do is I would say, because it's to his interest, too, to keep the filibuster. So we'll keep it. We'll keep it, Mitch. But let's talk about how we're going to keep it. We have whittled away at the filibuster up to now. First, it was with federal appointees to judgeships, and then it was the Supreme Court. So what else is there? I mean, he knows it. I don't. What other kind of measures are they likely to have to vote on in the next few years that he'll relax that he wants to relax the filibuster on, or make a deal about impeachment instead of going through a whole trial? We'll agree to pass a law saying he can't serve again and censure him. Something short of impeachment, which will make Republicans happy. In other words, what I'm saying, all of this is a long way of saying, freaking negotiate. Don't just give up. There aren't just two positions in this, win or lose. You negotiate.
You know, there's another factor here that I think may apply with this impeachment vote. And this is not a very hard projection for either spies or journalists. Whoever votes for impeachment, that's a Republican. They're going to get their lives threatened. They're going to have all their support withdrawn by the 80% of Republicans that support Donald Trump. And you may see one or two change party affiliation to independent caucusing with Democrats, given enough pressure. So who knows?
And they may be able to look in the mirror for the rest of their lives if they do the right thing.
There you go.
All right, let's see. Let's go back to the letters if we can. We go to Stu. Why doesn't anyone remind the public that Trump canceled Obama's pandemic commission soon after beginning his presidency? Is it any surprise that we were not ready for the pandemic when the effort to prepare was undone by Trump? Well, certainly that's something that Biden has mentioned on the campaign trail. I don't know what
But how did Stu, who wrote the letter, know it? I mean, obviously the press was on that. I knew it. I read it in the paper again and again and again. So this business of how come nobody ever talks about it, that's a little bit rough.
Carolyn writes, the press are reporting on very hard issues like Biden's Peloton or his Rolex watch. Scandalous.
This is what happens when you listen to Republicans and they set the media narrative for the day.
It was just a day that
all Republicans came out, and the best pushback I saw was on Twitter. They were like, Ivanka had a $75,000 purse on one of the White House things. It's not, you know, there are people who are fake billionaires were in the White House, and this, you know, Lyndon Johnson had a Rolex. You know, we should have just been laughing, but it's the tan suit of the day, and I'm afraid that we're going to get back to the tan suit of the day.
It is just stupid. It is just stupid. I'm sorry. It's stupid reporting. It's not an issue. The man has a watch. Okay. If I could afford a Rolex, I'd buy one too. I like them. I like watches. But okay, he's got a watch. So what? Let's talk about what he's really doing.
Trump was so bad, and we should never forget how dangerous he was, writes Irene. I think Biden ran on getting 1 million shots a day, 100 million shots in the first 100 days. I think the Biden administration would want it to be more, and we are working to get more, said Irene.
Thank you. That's a good answer.
And it's not something you ever heard come out of Trump, okay? He couldn't care less if people got vaccinated. He couldn't care less if people died, because they thought all the brown and black people were going to die, and that would guarantee him a re-election. Let's be honest about that.
Let's see. Let's go to...
Address your letters to Libby.
Yeah.
is there one?
No, but if there is enough volume, we'll have to set it up. John writes, the Biden administration needs to frame its policies and decisions based on a response to the real problems and issues rather than asking to be judged just on being better than Trump. We need to stop as soon as possible having Trump be the measure of anything.
I don't agree with that at all. No. Go ahead, Malcolm.
30,725 lies was the last count, the official last count by Dale on Trump's lies. That's the standard now. And it's an easy standard to beat, but you can't come out at a new administration and go, aha, one of your guys made a misperception and that's equal to Trump's lies. No, it's not. It's not lying. We make foibles and errors and flubs. You know, this goes back to, you know, Joe Biden's pattern of speech early on when everybody wanted to, you know, say he should get out of the election because of various things. He is not a liar, and that's
right.
The standard now. Sorry.
All right. And let's see. Let's go to Beth, who says, thanks to you all for guiding us through the hopefully final Trump chapter. In discussing Trump with my brother-in-law, who is a Trump supporter, he regularly brings up conspiracy theories and says all news outlets, including Fox News, are not reliable for facts anymore, fake news, etc. How can we have any discussion of this period if we can't agree on any of the facts? There's no solid ground. What do your guests think about finding news sources that we can all agree are correct? Rosemary, you want to take that one first?
Well, boy, if I had the answer to that, wouldn't I be a rich person? I don't think that's possible right now. I think that we all say we want news that's verified and checked out. And yet, if it doesn't agree with what we think, then we say, oh, it isn't verified or checked out. And I think it's a long, slow building to get back to a place where information is accepted, that some facts are accepted, that the norm is the beginning position, at least, is agreed upon by everyone. I think it's a really dark time, and that, and Biden does too. Biden talked about that in his inauguration address, that we have to get to a place where we agree on basic information.
Let's see, just a few minutes before the top of the hour break. Go ahead. Did anybody else want to say anything on that?
Yeah, I was just wondering about
it. I think it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very difficult. I'm monitoring these people all day long, and they absolutely think that any fact that comes from a news media source, including Fox News, is now a lie. They refuse to believe anything other than their own ecosphere. And despite the fact that people are shouting cancel culture, what's happening to them when they're being deplatformed on, you know, the Donald.win, which and other places, Parler? Freedom of speech isn't being taken away. They have the right to go right out on their front porch and say whatever they want. Their ability to lie and perpetuate those lies is being taken away. And I'm afraid to say we may have to narrow their little bubble for them to start dealing with reality.
You know, we have done that in the past. We cracked down on the KKK. We cracked down on extremists. You know, we cracked down on people who thought yelling fire in a crowded theater was okay and their freedom of speech, which is exactly what these people are doing. So we do have to make their bubble a lot smaller, and we do have to crack down on them. There's no two ways about it. These people are not exercising free speech. They're exercising insurrection.
We go to
addition.
But wait. What we're talking about though is canceling or censoring. It's not agreeing. Like the people, the places being deplatformed right now, did you ever listen or trust them? No, you did not, because you're on the liberal side. So that doesn't get to the central question of coming up with a source of information that everyone agrees on. If you remember, Trump said, just listen to me and I'll give it to you. That's the way of fascism. I don't think we're ever going to get to a point where everybody agrees on, oh, that's who I'm going to listen to.
No, but I'd like to get back to the point where the majority of the people in this country trust the media, trust the New York Times, trust the Washington Post, trust unbiased reporting. Yes, sometimes we get angry with the media, like I just did before. Okay, wait a minute, Rosemary. Some of us get frustrated, okay, with the media. But when I want facts, when I want to know what's really going on, I go to those trusted sources in the media. I do not go to I don't go to the far left resources. I certainly don't go to the right wing sources. But we have to get back to a place in this country where people are taught civics and they're taught that freedom of the press is important, and that the Gray Lady and the Washington Post are the bellwethers for journalism in this country.
The good news is...
Not also WAMC, but you guys know what I'm saying.
The good news is we have 45 more minutes for our panelists to yell at each other. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll let them continue. We have many letters from you. We'll even move on to new subjects, and they'll have new things to yell about. We welcome you, panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel this morning. It is 6 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post on the program this morning. And let's see, we'll try to get to some of your letters here, and then we'll move on to other stuff. Mitch writes, Rosemary is right. The media is doing their job asking hard but fair questions. Any administration, including Biden, should not expect or get any breaks. There's no going back to the time before Trump. It's time to hold elected officials accountable from day one.
I have a problem with that. Not the least. Of course, philosophically, the letter writer is absolutely correct. Everybody should be held to account. But you ought to take a look at what was trying to be accomplished here. We had a lying, 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 lying liar who was, as I keep saying, apparently trying to turn the Constitution on its head and to set up a dictatorship. Now, when you make this false equivalency about Biden should be held responsible just like Trump. No, no. Journalists had a responsibility to hold Trump accountable in a way that really took a lot of guts on a lot of journalists' parts, some of whom had them and some of whom didn't.
Anybody? All right.
I've said it already.
You said the same thing.
Right.
And because you did, I sent you a note. And it's
I know.
God bless you, Libby.
And I thank you for that, Alan. And God bless you, too.
I didn't know panelists were passing notes. Marion writes...
Not much you did.
This is like, we're a bunch of fifth graders. Of course we're going to pass notes.
Marion says if Trump had won, he would have taken over the media and we'd be the people not trusting the press and we'd be the insurrectionists. The issue is an establishment versus anti-establishment. It's democracy versus totalitarianism. There needs to be a way to tell that there are the professional standards the press is adhering to, and people need to be educated on how to make these judgments. We need a crash course now, but mostly it needs to start in grade school. Let's go to this letter from Justin, who says media pundits and commentators should include the verifiable sources of their information. Otherwise, they should clearly state that what they are saying is just an opinion. I expect this is in any scientific or academic articles. Let's see.
And in journalism articles, too. And in journalism articles, too, except in the right-wing press, which doesn't use facts or sources. It uses opinions all the time and mixes it. But we've lost, because media literacy is so low in our country these days, we've lost the ability to judge that.
Eric writes, I appreciate Rosemary's response, but I think the best way to come to a consensus of agreement towards quote-unquote facts could probably find an answer to in the bolstering of English classes grades 1 through 12 with an emphasis on the formulation of works cited and bibliography. So that's similar to the last letter. Let's see. We go to Bob. Says, according to press reports, Biden's Rolex watch belonged to his son, Bo, and Biden wears it in remembrance of Bo. Pretty understandable. Eric says, Rosemary should read Jennifer Rubin's editorial in the Washington Post today, citing 50 things that are already better with Biden in the Oval Office. Rosemary is right to ask the hard questions, but needs to look at both sides of the equation. No response from
Rosemary. Wait a minute. My argument is that you ask the hard questions and you put it in perspective. And I did read Rubin's article, and you're right. We are showing that even as early as we are in this administration, we're seeing markedly great changes. I do not think the media is out of line. And also this idea of blaming the media for perceptions that people have, I think that's also something that we need to look at. When we report accurately what Republicans are doing, we give a bad picture of Democrats and of Joe Biden's administration. So putting that in perspective is something that's very hard and that we will be working on, I suspect. I think after Trump, you're going to see the media really taking a look at how they cover power.
Let's go back to the letters here. We go to Stewart, who says two of the basic building blocks is the creation of the USA were genocide and racism. President Andrew Johnson's racist and violent speech during Reconstruction helped spark violent white supremacy, and Trump's language mirrors Johnson's. How do we acknowledge those roots and move forward in a country where 74 million people voted for a racist president?
That's right. And I've been saying it all along. It comes right out of the Civil War. Those people never went away. They may have died, but their heirs are there. And that's who the 74 million were, or 73 anyway.
Yeah.
Malcolm?
You know, I said this on Bill Maher's show on November 6th, the first show after the election, and I got savaged. I mean, people were saying, well, we've got to reach out to the 74 million. I said, they voted. Mm-hmm. They demonstrated their approval of straight-up racism in your face. And there's no hiding from that now, you know, and they're upset. You know, it's like the old trope. If you're upset at being called a white supremacist, maybe you're a white supremacist.
Maybe you should stop.
They don't see any moves. I'm sorry?
Or maybe you should just stop being a white supremacist.
Or you can stop. Yeah, but they don't see any of the moves supporting Black Lives Matter or E Pluribus Unum or any of those bizarre concepts that they don't understand. This is just pure tribalism, and they want their tribe to remain at the top to dominate all others.
And yet when you call them out on their stuff, you know, like when these guys couldn't get on their planes to go back from Washington, D.C. after they stormed the Capitol because they were put on a no-fly list, you know, then they become the snowflakes they accuse us of being. They're crying. They're, you know, oh, my God, I'm losing my job. I'm this and that and that. I'm like, get a grip. Be responsible for your actions.
There was a great discussion this morning on Morning Joe where they were saying the Justice Department is talking about not prosecuting as many as 800 people who entered the Capitol that they may be able to identify. And everyone's got to get prosecuted. Everyone that can be identified, yep, that they can track down, has to be prosecuted. This cannot allow to stand because Black Lives Matter protests and anarchists and, you know, all the rest of those guys were arrested and tear gassed and prosecuted, then these people should be prosecuted as well.
That's right, Malcolm. And from now on, if that 800 turns out to be true, then anybody should be allowed to bust into any place and not be prosecuted, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, according to them, it's unfair. And it just shows, look, the woman who stole Nancy Pelosi's laptop and was going to sell it to the Russians was released on bail, $3,000 bail. Okay, that's a separate system of justice here. Okay, you know, there's that famous case of the guy who stole a backpack and was held in Rikers for 3 years till he committed suicide. These people need to understand that the Justice Department needs to make the guidelines so that if no matter what happens here, you're not allowed off just because you were a Trump rioter. You shouldn't get bail for violent, you know, attempt to overthrow the government.
Back to the letters we go, and we check in with Jackie. Love the program and the passion expressed today and every day. I'm interested in the controversy surrounding the firing of Lauren Wolf from the New York Times, reportedly about bias. Also, Maggie Haberman, star Trump reporter whose mother handles PR for the Kushner family. Was there bias also in her reporting? Rosemary?
Wow, I'm sorry. I do not know.
Yeah, I do. Okay.
I do not know of the case, so ask Malcolm. He'll give you a bias view, but at least it's informed.
Now, you know, somebody who's a very high up in Hollywood wrote to me. Turns out that this journalist had, according to the story, right? We don't know all the details. The Times hasn't said anything. This young journalist had said that she felt a thrill when she saw Biden landing to come into Washington. And that was supposedly the basis of her, you know, the right-wing Twitter made a big thing of it and they terminated her. She has a whole bunch of issues and a dog. And, you know, you can't live in New York City without a really good paying job. So there's been this national controversy. She's got tens of thousands of comments to the New York Times demanding that they rehire her. But, you know, tell you the truth, I've noticed that when these things happen, they normally get hired by really good other organizations like The Atlantic and others. So maybe this is the best thing that happens to her. But I would like to hear the Times version of this.
Right.
Rosemary, is it fair to say that the Times is usually fairly forthcoming in such matters?
Well, I would say yes, except that caliphate, which was discussed on the Media Project, but we never talked about it on the roundtable. This was a story they did. If you remember that, a long podcast, and it was based on not a lie, but a source that was just simply incorrect. So if the whole basis of your story is incorrect, how do you defend any of it? And they said, well, it didn't live up to our standards. I mean, they didn't just pull the whole thing. That's not completely transparent in my way of thinking. I'm not sure that The Atlantic is an improvement over the Times. It certainly doesn't pay as well. But if it is, as you have portrayed, Malcolm, and I will check on this now because I haven't heard about this before now, she should have been let go. You can't work for for a news outlet like the New York Times and express such a strong bias as my heart thrilled to see Joe Biden win. You just can't do it. I don't report on Donald Trump. I have made my feelings about him very well known, and because of that, I have disqualified myself from covering him. And it is the same with her. She has made herself less useful to her news outlet. So I would be in support of what they did.
Libby?
What? What do I think about this?
Yeah.
You know, I get why the Times fired her, but I also get why she said, "I'm so thrilled." I mean, are we no longer allowed to have any personal expression when you are in the field of journalism? I mean, is it not allowed? And, you know, Rush Limbaugh and the rest of those guys never get fired for saying what they think. And it's certainly not what I would consider journalism. You know, I mean, I read this morning. Why?
Because what Rush Limbaugh does is the same thing that we're doing. It's saying what our opinion is. That's our job. This was a news reporter, and she made herself less useful to the paper. She opened herself up to the exact kind of criticism from the right that Malcolm has been describing.
Well, I read this morning of an editor, like a part-time editor at the Times, getting canned because she said that she had chills with Biden's inauguration, and she was a part-time editor. Yeah,
that's what we're talking editor. About.
Right, yes. She's a part-time editor. It's not like she's the managing editor of the New York Times. She's a part-time editor. She's not a reporter.
So why'd she have to?
From what I read,
she has to express herself at all. Who cares?
Why? Okay, never mind. Never mind. Never mind.
I'm okay.
Okay.
Well, you guys.
I'm curious why you've ended that, but that's okay.
You know,
well, no.
The problem is that the right wing knows how to play you. They know what your guardrails are. They know what your standards are, and they will get you fired. I had two movements to have me fired from MSNBC, and, you know, the only thing that saved me was not a journalist. Commentator, opinionist, spy. I give you intelligence analysis. I don't give you journalism. And, you know, those guys would savage a journalist in a heartbeat. So long as there's a different standard on how we respond to ourselves and self-immolate every time they decide that they're going to beat you up with your standards, then you won't have very many journalists for long.
That's the point of standards, is that you put them out and you say, this is what we stand for, and then you're supposed to live up to them. What's the point of having values if you're not going to promote them so that they can't be used against you? That's why I say this woman knew it. She knew it when she signed on as an editor, which is not a spy or a commentator. It's a news person. She had to live up to the standards, and she did not. Now, I'm not saying that firing was exactly fair. That's what I want to look at, the nuance of it. But certainly discipline is fair in this case.
Don't you think? Yeah. Don't you guys think that commentators? I want to go back to something somebody just said. I think Malcolm that commentators are journalists. I mean, they're in journals. They write opinion. If they write an opinion every day on the New York Times editorial page, or every 3 times a week or 2 times a week, you mean they're not journalists? Of course, they're journalists. I take some exception.
No.
To that.
It's a different kind of thing. It's not the same.
You know, no, nothing is the
same. No, journalists don't have to.
Nothing is the same.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, nothing is the same.
Sorry.
Well, this is Bash the Media Day. This is Bash the Media Day. I don't understand that.
Rosemary, with so much respect I have for you, you're just so wrong.
It's Monday.
All right.
Okay, next letter, Joe.
Okay,
thank you, Libby.
You're very nice.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you helping. Mr. Nance's comment that was along the lines of, if being called a racist upsets and offends you, maybe you're a racist, is patently absurd. How would any react to being called a spouse abuser, wife beater, what about elderly parent abuser? Anyone is rightly offended by vile, inaccurate accusations. Sorry to hear members sliding into this. Once again, Rosemary again saves the panel by remaining rational and the only adult in the room. Ooh, okay.
You know, I knew somebody was going to catch that. What I meant was within the context of Trump voters who are constantly bashing the Black Lives Matter movement, constantly bashing any thought that there's Trump is a white supremacist. They're often the first thing they say is, we're not white supremacists, and they're offended by it. But they will vote for those policies and that person. They demonstrate it,
and
their support.
And honestly, they are white supremacists, and they are racist, and they don't like being called out on it. You know, oh, well, I've got a black friend. Well, that's lovely, but that doesn't mean you're not a racist. I mean, give me a break. You know, when you support policies that put children in cages, that say Mexicans are racist, are rapists, that it's okay if black and brown people die from COVID, which is what we knew came out of this old administration, the Trump administration. We saw the reporting of that in journalism. You know, yeah, you're a racist, sorry. You know, but the fact of the matter is that we are all, every white person is born with white skin and white privilege. And we all have to recognize what that white privilege means and work to correct it, you know, and to work against racism. The only way racism is going to disappear in this country is if white people rise up and say it's wrong.
Yeah. You know, speaking of which, I just wrote an op-ed, which I'm hoping the Washington Post will finally finish off and publish, where I make it very clear that the ultimate example of white privilege, as far as I'm concerned forever, is that, you know, Capitol Hill police did not see 40,000 Trump voters as worthy of bringing in even a second shift to the Capitol.
Right.
And then when they did storm the building, because they were white Trump voters and they're not Black Lives Matter. And when they did storm the building, started smashing in, threatened to kill people, killed people, they ushered them out instead of arresting people. There were only 12 arrests before the curfew, and the 44 others were arrested for violating curfew. And every subsequent arrest has been through the FBI identifying the insurrectionists. There were organized capture and kill teams, we now know, according to indictments from the from the Department of Justice. Hundreds of militia men, Boogaloo boys, there in organized units with helmets, body armor, and everything were allowed to come to that rally with that stuff. So they all got off.
And let me just say, Malcolm,
people attacked, if, couldn't have been a bad
if, thing. If any of the Black Lives Matter folks had come to that this summer with AK-47s or the kind of stuff that these guys came with, there would have been blood running in the streets of Washington, D.C., because we know law enforcement and the military, they would have shot to kill these people. It's just that simple. Yeah. That's white privilege, folks.
All right. Let's see. We just have about 4 minutes before we go to the bottom of the hour, so let me bring in some more letters. I'm not apprised of 100% of the facts surrounding the firing of the New York Times reporter. However, this is one of the most hypocritical conversations I've heard on WAMC. The media, whether through headlines or reporting, is invariably guilty of some degree of bias. While the right-wing media can barely even be described as media, facts are the New York Times and many other media outlets have a certain degree of bias, and that's why people on the right can constantly point the finger. All of it needs to be cleaned up. Maybe there was never objective reporting, but please, let's not exaggerate the non-bias of the media in general. That from Lawrence. Brandon writes, it's ridiculous and you will be ridiculed to lump the tens of millions of voters who voted for Trump into a simple description of racist or anything else. The stereotype certainly fits some, but many, possibly a majority of the people you're judging may well share more of your values than you oppose.
And Joe, Chris writes, Rosemary's wrong. The reporter in question at the New York Times was reacting to the transfer of power in capital letters after a coup attempt. She gets to express that. Chris from West Chesterfield.
Okay, well, that's true. I said I did not know the details, and I admit that up front. So I will be reading that eagerly as soon as the show is over.
All right.
Back to that
Yes, go ahead, Malcolm.
About race. Okay, I'm going to spell this out again as the, okay. I know as an African-American, I might be a little sensitive to this subject, but, you know, hey, I've had my freedom for 150 some odd years, so I'm good to go.
Right.
On the other side, Trump made it very clear that white domination was what he was about, to the point of attempting to overthrow the government. So don't tell me, yes, we all have shared values, and I, as a person who defended your values, I want to share those values with you. I want to go out to cookouts with you guys. I want to do this. But if you think that the one thing that you had no problem with was allowing a president to run with militias, white supremacist, racist groups, the Ku Klux Klan's endorsement, and all of that, and you thought, hey, Trump is just awesome, then you supported white supremacy, mm-hmm. whether you think you did or not. And you need to reevaluate yourself, maybe. Not. Don't look at me.
Well put.
We already know.
Well put.
Now I'm going to get it again. Watch.
Okay. let's go to Rick, who says, Rosemary is right. The press has a responsibility both with Trump and now with Biden. Just because they failed with Trump does not mean that they should fail with Biden. They, Trump and Biden, should be held to the same standards. Ask the tough questions. Christine says, I completely agree with Rosemary. Reporting journalists must stay unbiased. An opinion journalist is free to share personal views. The line between reporting and opinion has been blurred over the last 30 years and has helped to contribute, along with the removal of the FCC fairness doctrine, the eroding trust of the media. And last letter before we go to a break. It seems to me that the news reporting should be reporting news without any personal opinion involved. News analysts and opinions are different branches of the generic term journalism.
That's true, but I've debated this with my fellow opinion people on the Media Project.
10 seconds.
Every single time a reporter writes a story, there has to be bias in it. There has to be.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this morning. It's very nice to come together. And let's see. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. I want to get to some other topics here. And we have Rosemary Mayo, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post. I think Alan had to go. So we are without him, but he has had an appointment that he's going to. So we will move on without him for the remainder of the program this morning. But I did want to get to some other topics, and that is we want to talk about Senate gridlock. We touched on this, of course, but I would like to talk much more about it and where we are right now. So the question remains, well, who has the power? How do you share? How do you get along with others? the fight over the rules grinds to a halt in periling Biden's legislative agenda. When President Biden took office last week, he promised sweeping bipartisan legislation to solve the coronavirus pandemic, fix the economy, and overhaul immigration. Just days later, the Senate ground to a halt with Democrats and Republicans unable to agree on even basic rules of how the evenly divided body should operate. Meanwhile, key Republicans have quickly signaled discomfort with or outright dismissal of the cornerstone of Biden's early legislative agenda, a $1.9 trillion pandemic relief plan that includes measures such as $1,400 stimulus checks, vaccine distribution funding, and a $15 minimum wage. On top of that, senators are preparing for a second impeachment trial for former President Donald Trump, set to begin February 9th, which could mire all other Senate business and further obliterate any hopes of cross-party cooperation. Libby, you first.
Well, I just saw a piece that the Supreme Court has declined to hear a case concerning the Emoluments Clause, which, you know, it's like you want to talk about fair play. That throws it all out the window. Look, I think that it's going to take time. There's going to be gridlock. And as I said before, the Democrats just need to come out swinging and blame and put the blame squirrely where it belongs, which is in the Republicans' hands. They enabled Trump. They let him do what they did, what he did. Now they're crying, foul. I'm sorry, but they made this situation. They have to do something to solve the situation. I think Schumer and the rest of the Democrats just need to brand the Republicans as the COVID-19 causers. They caused this pandemic because they refused to make Trump do his job. And then they talk about what I find astounding is their duplicity in saying, oh, we can't pass this one point whatever trillion because it'll drive up the deficit. Well, look what happened to the deficit on their watch in the last 4 years. It's unbelievably big. It's over $1 trillion, and it's their fault. That's all.
Rosemary.
Well, of course, everything that Libby said is true, but that leaves you with the operational problem of how to proceed. It's not just enough to blame them and call out their hypocrisy. We already know that. This is all a power play, and McConnell is so damn good at it, and he's playing that now. And so that's why I'm thinking Schumer's got to do some negotiating with him. I think that there was really an effort. It started yesterday when Biden had a Zoom call with a bipartisan group. There is true discussion and disagreement on both sides about what help should look like, what stimulus should look like. And so why does it have to be checks? That's a problem. Why can't it be directed to certain programs or to things like schools or to help for the states? And I think that we've not done enough work, legislative work, to reach a compromise. I think that's what could solve everything. And then on top of all this, the rules for the Senate are not set up, which means that the Democrats aren't in control yet. They are not controlling committees. New members don't have appointments. That has to be fixed. That has to be Schumer's first job. And Biden can't help too much with that. So a lot of this is on Chuck Schumer, and he's got a formidable foe. I'm not sure he's up to the job.
I think he is. I think he needs to play hardball. And I think he needs to take a few pages out of Governor Cuomo's playbook, to be quite honest with you, and just go hard and go after them.
Malcolm Nance.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's time for the Democrats to go big or go home. And the Republicans know that. So the first thing the Republicans will do is complain about everything. Mitch McConnell played hardball with barely a majority, with one vote extra. And he just pretended like the Democrats didn't exist. So the Democrats need to do the same thing. There won't be any kumbaya for a while. And I'm not joking about when they take up the impeachment trial on the 8th, we're going to see a big change. If Mitch McConnell's already made essentially a death march statement when he said that Trump was responsible, that the rhetoric was responsible, that McConnell himself and Republicans enabled it. I'm telling you, on these message boards, these guys think McConnell is a communist card-carrying member of the Central Chinese Communist Party. The racism against his wife is off the charts. If he thinks he's a Republican, he's living in a fantasy world. I don't even think that there will be a Republican Party in 6 months. Everything that I see right now is there's going to be a Patriot Party. And Trump has been laying low because he fully intends to take 80% of the Republican Party away and try to mobilize that and get to the silent majority in the United States with this Patriot Party that will be 100 times more virulent than what we have today. So in maybe 2 or 3 weeks, when the real death threats start coming into those guys from the right, super right wing and the militias, I wouldn't be surprised if they get a conviction on Trump. And then at that point, you get 2 or 3 defections to the Democrats operating as independents, because they're not going to be able to withstand, stay in the Republican Party. That's for sure.
Anyone on that?
I'm with Paul Krugman on this, and the New York Times Nobel Prize winner, pretty smart guy. He says there's no way that Mitch McConnell will ever vote for conviction. And I think he's right about that. There's no way he can and hold together the Republican Party. He's aware of the same forces, Malcolm, that you were just talking about. So he'll say all the right things like, oh, this was bad. This was horrible. He should never have done it. Let's move on. And I think that you're seeing that same sort of sentiment from other Republicans, key Republicans, who at first seemed to agree that it was kind of a bad thing to mount an insurrection. They're not saying that now. And as for Trump mounting a Patriot Party, that would actually be great for Democrats because they would be so much easier to beat than rational, moderate, conservative, fiscally responsible Republicans that we've seen in the past.
All right, let's go to some more letters, if we can. We go to Wendy. It seems to me that news reporting, I think I did that one, actually. Chris says, actively choosing not to absorb news from a range of media is unbelievably stupid. Will we ever again hear public service announcements from impartial ad councils or League of Women Voters or fairness and accuracy in reporting that teach how to search out bias in the media? How many of us are old enough to remember a current events or civics class that had us devouring an international news buffet? There's something for Dr. Jill Biden to promote from elementary to adult education. Lastly, the Biden administration needs to get behind a paid Election Day holiday. Go ahead, Malcolm.
Yeah, the Finnish government actually instituted this about 5 years ago, and what they called cyber hygiene. And they started at elementary school now, learning what the real sources of information are and teaching people not to trust, dangerous sources or just unidentified sources. And I thought, has the House passed H.R. 1 from last time, that new voting rights bill that makes Election Day a holiday? No? Are they reintroducing it? I wonder.
Yes. From what I understand, they're reintroducing it.
Awesome.
Anthony writes to us and says, what is more hypocritical, Tea Party patriots complaining that Black Lives Matter protesters vandalize property or MAGA supporters complaining that they are branded terrorists because of their beliefs? Let's see.
Interesting fact.
Go ahead.
I just saw this in Time magazine. During the Black Lives Matter protest, in a 10-day period, 10,000 people were arrested on misdemeanors. And those misdemeanors are upending their lives. It's in this week's Time magazine because they can't apply for credit. They have these unadjudicated arrests on there. So I'm all for every person that even looked at the Capitol and got on its grounds, which is about 3,000 to 5,000 people being prosecuted ruthlessly or for the felony that it was that they did. So, yeah, I don't want to hear about Black Lives Matter anymore. You know, these same people are still saying it was Antifa destroying the Capitol, even though every one of them has been identified as themselves. They live in this fantasy world where they're blameless for everything.
You know, Malcolm, you are totally right, but you don't even have to be a Black Lives Matter sympathizer to have this viewpoint. During the inauguration of the Trump, you will remember, there were protests against him, and they were brutally put down. This was white on white, so it's not a racial thing. It was just anti-Trump. And those people were charged with outrageously outlandish felonies. In fact, most of them got off because they were so overcharged. But if you could do it then to handle this, this demonstration was handled completely differently, and that's so unfair.
It reminds me of that case in Texas where the guy commits vehicular homicide and the judge says, this will ruin his life.
Right.
You know, white kid.
Well, look
you all went
did.
In there. You all want to get it.
You know, any white kid, you know, the kid that was raping a girl, a college kid is raping a girl behind a trash, receptacle, outside one of those big things. He was let off because he was from a good family. You know, you had a black kid doing that, he'd be serving 40 years in jail. And it's just that simple, And again, if the folks from Black Lives Matter had brought guns with them this summer, there would have been a river of blood in the streets of D.C.
Yeah, I mean, they've even pointed it out, that young woman who got the laptop from Nancy Pelosi's office and wanted to sell it to her friend in Russia. She got let out in the care, the custody of her mother. If that had been a black teenager, do you think that would have happened?
No.
God, look at, well, look at, you know, what's her name, Winter, the woman who released classified information. No one considered her for a pardon, but they considered Edward Snowden and Julian Assange, reality winner is her name. But, you know, different standards. And that's something that needs to be, they need to have legislation on that.
All right, 2-minute warning here. Lynn says DOJ is not going to prosecute some insurrectionists. What does Malcolm think about that?
Just addressed it.
Yep, you did. Does Malcolm,
they're
given
discussing
the
it.
Given the January 6th attack, think there should be some kind of, does Malcolm think that there should be some kind of Secret Service level of protection for members of Congress?
Well, I think the Capitol itself, and I recommended this on the 7th, it's being implemented. I said they're going to need a Versailles or Buckingham Palace size 20-foot fence around the perimeter of the Capitol, which they should have had 200 years ago. I don't know why, you know, making those grounds so that when you hit those gates, you know, there's no getting through it. So that it turns out Congress directed the architect of the Capitol to immediately draft up plans to put a securable fence all the way around there. They don't need Secret Service protection for every member of Congress. You don't, you know, but I'll tell you another rule that should go like today. And I don't know why it hasn't happened. No guns on the Capitol grounds. These Republicans who have been flirting with the rules where you can have firearms on Capitol grounds but not in the House chamber, zip, zero, nada. How do I know one of them won't lose their mind and start murdering the, you know, the senior leadership? No guns in the Capitol amongst members or anyone.
And Boebert would. She would lose her mind.
Mm. Oh, she is probably going to get implicated in this. Insurrection.
We are out of time, folks, but I thank you very much for being with us. Rosemary, Malcolm Nance, Libby Post, thank you very much. Of course, Alan Chartok. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Roundtable panel. Up next, we go to the Congressional Corner.